Well, all science is either physics or stamp collecting. That's what Lord Rutherford, the nuclear physicist, said. It's probably a little harsh, but Raghavir Parthasarathy can probably relate. Parthasarathy, he goes by the name Raghu, is a physicist at the University of Oregon whose work crosses over into biology, chemistry, and neuroscience. His work includes researching the microbiome of the gut, which influences a person's overall health. And it's not just people, all animals. He's our guest on this month's edition of Curious, where research meets radio. Good morning, Raghu.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks for joining us this morning. So when we talk about physics, we think either very, very small atoms and neutrinos or really, really big like galaxies and black holes. But typically we don't think about microbes and animals. So yeah. What role does a physicist play in a biological study?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think part of the answer to that is that, you know, you're right. Most people, when they think about physics, think about the very small and the very big. But there's a whole nother kind of thread in physics that's been sort of a big deal for the last half century or so, which is not asking what are the like little pieces and big pieces, but how do pieces work together to give us, you know, materials and structures and things like that. So what is it about, you know, the interactions between iron atoms that make iron a magnet? Or what is it about water that makes it flow like a liquid and then freeze at a particular temperature and things like that? So that idea of looking at interactions is a big one in physics. And even within that, though, it's still kind of weird to think about physicists looking at, you know, bacteria, especially, you know, bacteria inside a gut. And, I mean, I have to say, if I had gone back in time 20 years to, like, when I was undergrad in college and told my, 20 years ago self that I'd be looking at bacteria in fish guts, I would have, you know, found it as unbelievable as if my future self had told me I'd be, like, an NFL linebacker. So it is still a leap to go from, you know, interacting materials to, like, guts. But it kind of makes sense from a perspective of a field of physics known as biophysics, which is what I work in. So basically, I'm a biophysicist, and what that involves is asking, you know, how can we understand the stuff that makes up life? So what is it about the mechanical properties of DNA that allow you to squish a meter of it into each one of your cells? Or what is it about cells that make them able to, like, crawl around or swim or things like that?
So explain to us the ongoing study of gut microbes specifically that you're involved in at the University of Oregon and the role of the lab that has the acronym META.
Yeah. So there's been just an enormous explosion of interest in gut bacteria in recent years. And it's interesting, you know, we think of ourselves as human, and, you know, that's true, but we're actually this weird consortium of lots and lots of different species put together. So we are human. If you look at, you know, your skin cells and neurons and things like that and looked at their DNA, it would be human DNA. But we also carry along with us trillions and trillions of microbes. In fact, we actually have more bacterial and other microbial cells in our body than we have human cells. And most of these live inside our gut. And what we're increasingly, like, you know, our intestine especially, and increasingly what we're realizing is that these gut bacteria play really important roles in, like, normal processes like digestion and training your immune system and stuff like that. And also that when their composition is weird, we have imbalances in different species that are present, that affects a lot of different diseases. So diseases like diabetes, inflammatory bowel disease, asthma, obesity, these are all correlated with differences in what gut microbes we have. So a lot of people are looking at this, including at the University of Oregon, this sort of consortium of research groups referred to as META that I'm part of as well.
So it's an interdisciplinary team then?
Yes, very much so. So we have, as you mentioned, I'm in the physics department. We have, of course, several people from biology, neuroscience, chemistry, even computer science and math, because there's a lot of informatics studies looking at genome sequences and things like that. So it's a very interdisciplinary group because it's actually a very kind of complex and interdisciplinary topic.
So if I understand at least one aspect of your role in this study, you're looking at communities of gut microbes and how they interact, and you begin discovering through your own mathematical modeling how these microbe communities interact and grow?
Yeah. So what my research lab especially brings to this is another tool coming out of physics, which is microscopy and being able to, like, actually look at small systems in kind of exquisite detail. So one of the things my research lab, meaning the graduate students and undergraduates and myself in the lab, do a lot of is building new types of microscopes, especially ones that are very good at kind of very gentle three-dimensional imaging. So what we do actually is look, quite literally, we just look at the gut microbes inside zebrafish. I can tell you more about why zebrafish in just a little bit. But by doing that, we can see, you know, what do these communities of microbes actually look like? And, you know, this sounds kind of, you know, obvious, but it turns out to be something that's really, really powerful. So if you imagine, you know, you think about like a forest, and, you know, let's suppose you knew that that forest had trees and mountain lions and deer, but you had no idea that, like, trees are stationary and deer can run around and mountain lions can chase after deer. You know, things about the kind of structure and motion in that system are really important to understand, like, how it works. So our approach has been, let's build new tools and actually look inside this gut microbial system. And so what we've been able to do is actually watch these communities growing, interacting. We can see bacteria swimming around, all sorts of stuff like that.
You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange here on Jefferson Public Radio, and our guest is a physicist at the University of Oregon, Raghu Parthasarathy, and you can call us if you have questions or want to participate in the discussion this morning at 800-838-3760, or send your emails during the broadcast to jx@jeffnet.org. So zebrafish, what role do they play?
So zebrafish, we want to understand these gut microbes. And like I said, we have trillions and trillions of them in our own guts. And that's true, actually, of all, well, it's basically true of all animals, and it's especially true of all vertebrates, you know, things with backbones. And we make use of these gut microbes for things like digestion and immunity and stuff like that. So, you know, we want to look inside at the guts and see these bacterial communities, but we can't do that in humans. We're just, you know, not very accessible and not very easy to look into. So in lots of different areas of biology, zebrafish have become like a very popular organism to look at because they're also vertebrates. And so they have a lot of similarities in their anatomy, their genetics, and so on to humans. But they have a lot of kind of nice advantages. So at young ages, it turns out they're actually quite transparent. So we work with larval zebrafish, so just they're kind of tadpole-sized little baby zebrafish, and you can see through them quite well. So they're very amenable to doing this kind of three-dimensional microscopy. Plus, you can do other things. There are, for example, transgenic zebrafish that have different mutations that mimic various human diseases. So we've been looking at some of those. And also zebrafish that have engineered to have, for example, immune cells that light up. So you can look at interactions between the immune system and bacteria. So with all of this, the idea is that we can understand in this very kind of tractable system some of these general principles about how gut bacteria work.
So if the gut microbiome is essentially an ecosystem, there must be competition between the species. You know, the bugs are fighting it out all the time. Is there also cooperation and like symbiotic relationships like you find elsewhere in nature?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the short answer is yes. So from work that you know a variety of groups have done, it does appear that there are symbiotic interactions. So one species of bacteria might make some chemical that another species of bacterium can make use of as a nutrient. So there are definitely cooperative as well as competitive interactions. But figuring out exactly, you know, what those are and how important different competitive and cooperative interactions are is still a real challenge. So we're still at the point of just sort of knowing that these things are important and just developing kind of the tools to say more about them.
We have a call here on the Jefferson Exchange, George in Wairika. Good morning, George. You're on the air.
Thank you so very much. I have a daughter-in-law who has been a lifelong vegetarian and has had a an irritable bowel she started with, and it's gotten to the point where she is required to eat meat, and any kind of sugar causes her instant painful bloating, and it's to the point where it apparently is life-threatening. I find this absolutely terrifying because I don't understand it. They've spent unbelievable amounts of money trying to cure the gut bacteria problem.
Yeah.
Help.
Yeah, so I feel your pain. Interestingly, I'm a vegetarian myself, actually. So I certainly can't tell you anything specific any more than your daughter's doctors can, and I wish them all the very best of luck. More generally, I can point out that there is very much a connection between a lot of intestinal diseases and gut bacteria, like you pointed out. So things like colitis, like inflammation of the intestine, inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's disease, which actually my sister-in-law has, are all very strongly correlated with having kind of different bacterial species present in the gut. And coming back to John's point earlier, you know, why we have different species in different people and people with different diseases is something we still don't really understand. Like, what is it about the cooperation and the competition that makes that the way it is? So one thing that's been, you know, in the news a lot recently that actually seems to work for some of these diseases is a treatment actually called fecal transplants, which is kind of what you might think from the name, transplanting, you know, feces from one person into the intestine of another as a way of kind of forcefully rebooting the gut microbes. And there are some intestinal diseases like colitis, actually, where that's actually been proven to be a really quite effective treatment. And people are trying that out for different intestinal diseases. So, I mean, I would certainly hope that kind of brute force treatments like that, or just a better understanding of these interactions between gut microbes can help people like your daughter, and that's what a lot of people are working on at the moment.
It's the Jefferson Exchange here on Jefferson Public Radio. Our guest this morning is Raghu Parthasarathy, who is a physicist at the University of Oregon. We're talking about his work on a multidisciplinary team at the U of O on the gut ecosystem, the gut microbiome. Raghu, I've read recently that the loss of biodiversity in our exterior environment may also be mirrored by a loss of biodiversity in our guts. Has your team addressed this? Is that even true?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So yeah, like you said, there's this widespread hypothesis at the moment that we are depleting the biodiversity of microbes in our environment, you know, the microbes in our built environment, like houses and buildings and so on, and also those in kind of the environment around us, especially through things like not interacting so much with the natural world. And there's an idea that that is reflected in a lack of diversity in our gut microbes as well. So there definitely are people here at Oregon who are working on that thought. It's still at the stages, I would say, of being a good but not established hypothesis, basically because it's quite hard to tell sort of what causes what in terms of diversity of microbes within us and microbes around us. But it's definitely well established that the diversity of bacteria in the guts of people in like modern Western cultures like our own is definitely less diverse than you know, hunter-gatherer societies or tribal groups living in kind of remote and, so to speak, more natural conditions. Hmm. And so that provides a bit of some of the kind of motivation for that diversity hypothesis.
We have another call here on the Jefferson Exchange, and this is from Morty in Ashland. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Well, I was wondering, I've been reading and hearing a good deal about some interaction or correlation between what's happening in the gut biome and particular mental situations that are not quite normal, like ADHD and things like that. And I was, since we have a family member who's involved with that, I was wondering what if your research is working on that as well.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, yeah, there's been a lot of recent interest in the so-called gut-brain axis. So, effects of things going on in your intestines, especially things controlled by gut microbes, having an effect on like mental processes. And yeah, that's the topic of a lot of research at the moment. And basically, it's at the point right now where people are uncovering intriguing correlations between these two. So differences in gut microbe, differences in like the composition of the gut microbiome in like healthy people and people with like schizophrenia, for example, or other mental disorders. In general, we still we're at the point where we are observing correlations like this, but we're not sure which causes which, or if these correlations kind of are coincidental or not. But it's a really, really intriguing area. One of the places that there definitely are people here at Oregon working on this. In fact, zebrafish as a way to get at some of these questions in an actual, like, controlled kind of way. So with zebrafish, one thing I forgot to mention is that you can actually, by controlling the environment that you keep them in, change what gut microbial compositions you have in them. And in fact, you can even have zebrafish, at least at young ages, that don't have any gut microbes at all by keeping them in sterile environments. And then you can look at things like their social behavior or their interactions, with the reflection and things like that, and actually do controlled experiments on these gut-brain systems. So I think that'll be a really exciting area in the near future, and hopefully we can figure out things that help people with a variety of mental issues.
We're talking with a physicist from the University of Oregon this morning here on the Jefferson Exchange, Raghu Parthasarathy, and you can join the conversation by calling us at 800-838-3760, or you can email us during the live broadcast at jx@jeffnet.org. And this is Connie in Eugene. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, gentlemen. I have a question about evolution in all of this, in that we have so many different peoples who had very unique diets. Some are very fish-based, some are animal protein-based, more carbohydrates, a lot of lactose, etc. And these peoples all over the earth, although they moved slowly from place to place, were generally in a similar area, encountering all the bacteria there, as well as bacteria in their gut with a diet that had evolved and had sustained over maybe hundreds of generations. And I wondered about the genetics behind that, and that would cause an actual change in how the body would respond if you're from this culture or country as opposed to that culture or country.
Yeah, that's a great question. It's also nice to hear someone from Eugene. Yeah, that's an excellent question. And this whole issue of evolution in this comes up actually in a lot of different ways. So first of all, even taking a further step back, there's increasingly this realization that, you know, animals all evolved in the context of having microbes all around and all within them. So, animals didn't evolve in a vacuum, but evolved to be symbionts of these bacteria that are all around us. So, in a sense, we can't think about processes like digestion and immune response and things like that without thinking of microbes as an integral part of this. But coming to your main question of how we can kind of figure out the genetic component of gut microbial composition, that also is a great question. And it's a tough one to address because we know that, for example, diet changes the composition of gut microbes within you. And different groups that have like different evolutionary histories or different just genetic backgrounds might have different genetics, but also probably have different diets. So how to untangle these is something that's very tricky. So there's a lot of nice work being done in this direction, in fact, including by people here at the University of Oregon. So one of my colleagues, who's in our Institute for Ecology and Evolution and is also part of this meta consortium of people here, has been doing this beautiful study, doing field work, for example, in Ecuador, looking at groups that are genetically the same, but go from, within the course of one generation, from being kind of rural subsistence farmers to being integrated with like an urban market economy. So using things like that to untangle the genetic component from the like dietary or environmental component. So there again, I know this is an answer I keep giving, but we're at the stage of kind of knowing that there are tantalizing things to look at along these axes, but not really knowing what the full answer is.
Lots and lots of correlations, but maybe not so many causations. It's kind of hard to untangle all of that.
It is. But, I actually gave a talk to my colleagues in the physics department about a year ago, and I was describing my own work of looking at these gut microbes and figuring out what these structures and communities are doing, and also giving a lot of this broader picture about correlations. And I pointed out, it is a sometimes messy and confusing field. But I also pointed out to people, I put up a quote from Wolfgang Pauli, who was a giant in like quantum mechanics and about a century ago. And it was a quote from him that's one of my favorites. It says, nobody should work on semiconductors. They're a filthy mess. I mean, who knows if they even exist or not? The semiconductors, which are now the backbone of all of modern electronics and one of the most controllable and reliable things there are, 100 years ago was a terrible mess. And like this, people just had like kind of correlations between different phenomena and things like that. So I pointed out that, a lot of really interesting and important areas of science, kind of necessarily start off as a big mess. And it's kind of our job to wade into that mess and try to make some sense of it.
Our guest this morning is Raghu Parthasarathy, who is a physicist at the University of Oregon, working on a multidisciplinary team investigating the gut biome. And you can actually, we just have a couple of minutes left, Raghu. I want to talk about your really entertaining blog, which people can visit and follow your work even more. It's called The 18th Elephant. And what's the origin of that?
Oh, so the origin of the name or the origin of the blog?
The origin of the name.
Oh, okay. So the name comes from an Indian folktale. So I'm Indian by background, from India. And there's a beautiful folktale. Since we don't have a lot of time, what I think I will do...
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put a link to that because
exactly.
We only have 10 seconds left.
Exactly.
We'll put a
so
link
tell
on our website.
To go to the About page of the blog that you can get an explanation of the name. And it's one of my favorite stories. And I tell it in my class, and the kids really love it. So,
thanks very much.
Yeah.